Too many people believe that if they keep their heads down and work hard, they'll be recognized on the merits of their work. But that's simply not true anymore. Safe jobs are disappearing daily. To make a name for yourself and to make a difference in the world, you have to share your unique perspective as well as inspire others to take action. And Dorothy Clark is the person to show you how. She's a marketing strategy consultant, professional speaker, and frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, Time, Entrepreneur, and the World Economic Forum blog. She's the author of Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future, which has been translated into Russian, Chinese, Arabic, French, Polish, and Thai, and her most recent book, which I've read three times, Standout, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. I'd like to proudly welcome to those diner and motorcycle guys someone who is, well, the expert on how to be an expert, Dorothy Clark. Welcome, Dorothy.
Hey, Garrison. Thanks so much for having me.
The career landscape has certainly changed from my days or my parents' days, from the gold watch baby boomer generation when employees spent most, if not all, of their work life with one company versus today when people average almost a dozen and a half jobs across their careers with an average single job expectancy of 2.2 years, with seniors working longer into their lives. How does this change affect job search and career management strategies?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes, Garrison, is the fact that the advice that so many of us received in the past about, you know, don't worry about your brand, that's ridiculous. Just focus on doing a good job. Just focus on working hard. That may have been reasonable advice 20 years ago, but things have changed so dramatically because if you are working at jobs for shorter periods of time, if you're working in industries for shorter periods of time, you simply don't have the ability to build up the kind of reputation by osmosis that you might have in the past if you had been with the same company for 10 or 20 or 30 years. So I think that people, if they want to make sure their true talents are recognized, they have to be a little bit more focused, a little bit more strategic about what their brand is and what they want to be known for.
I remember the days of if you wanted to look for a job, you typed a resume, put it in the fax, sent it to a recruiter, and then got scheduled for interviews. It's nothing like that anymore.
It's true. It's true. And even that's not so long ago. I used to teach in a political communication department at a university. And the woman who was the chair of the department told me a great story about how when she was younger, she had worked doing press on Jimmy Carter's presidential campaign. And, you know, we were sort of marveling about the technological changes. And I couldn't even figure it out. I'm like, wait a minute, how did you actually communicate with the press? How did you let them know that things were happening if you didn't have, you know, you could call everybody, but at a certain point that becomes problematic. You know, if you don't have email, if you don't have fax machines. She said that what her job was that because she was pretty young, she was a low man on the totem pole, they would print out a number of, you know, let's say 20 press releases, and she would get in a taxi cab and ride all afternoon in the taxi cab and bring it to the news organizations and hand it to the reporters.
Oh, man. Why do the words old-fashioned come to mind? You write in your book Standout that standing out is no longer optional. How do older workers, especially, let's say, those who've settled into what I'd call an occupational comfort zone, adapt to building a strong professional reputation in today's marketplace?
Well, I think the idea may seem daunting to some folks, but the truth is it doesn't necessarily require a huge amount of extra effort or doing something different. What it does require is being a lot more focused and putting some thought into it. So I think that the first thing is to really get clear on what strengths you want to be known for. because a lot of people, you know, we've grown up with baggage. And so we think that even the idea of thinking through what our personal brand is or should be seems somehow narcissistic. And so a lot of people just stay away from it for that reason, because they don't want to be that kind of person. But I would encourage folks to really take the time to focus in, because the first place is, number one, understanding how you are currently perceived by others. And then number two, just creating a vision of how you would like to be seen. Because for most people, there's a gap of some sort between those two. And once you get clear on the two points, that, you know, the place you are now and the destination, it becomes a lot easier to work backwards strategically and figure out, okay, well, what are the steps then that I would need to take to get from here to there?
After reading Standout, I was so taken back in a good way by how typical it is of people that we don't really organize ourselves around what we do well. It seems that we have almost an aversion to focusing on all the great things we're capable of.
Yeah, it's really true. An interesting thing, when I was writing my first book, Reinventing You, I interviewed a woman named Phyllis Stein, who used to head up Radcliffe Career Services at Harvard. And she said something that I thought was rather fascinating, which is that when she was working with really high achieving people, she said that on the whole, she saw this again and again, it was much easier for those people to know what their flaws were and what their shortcomings were. And they really couldn't see their strengths. And you might intuitively think the opposite, that someone who is very successful, it would be easy for them to see what their strengths are. But the truth is, a lot of these people have very high standards, and you might say, wow, you know, you're really good at this. And then their immediate response would be, well, everybody can do that, or that's nothing special.
We often hear that one of the greatest assets that older workers have is experience. How, Dory, can people integrate and communicate your mantra that the world needs you into their career management strategies?
The experience, of course, can be a really huge selling point. And the question is, how do you frame it and position it in a way that really feels relevant? So a challenge that I hear about a lot is when people are reinventing themselves. They are maybe shifting companies, maybe they're shifting industries. And there's a lot of fear and trepidation, because, of course, you would be pretty hesitant if you felt like the 30 years of experience you had professionally was essentially not going to count, or was going to be disqualified or deemed irrelevant if you shift into a new role. And so that makes a lot of people who might like to make changes in their professional life hesitant to do so, because they fear that they are risking the benefit of all of that experience. And what I would encourage folks to do is to really recognize that if you make the case, and this is where it's your actions, the way that you frame things are very important, because other people are not necessarily going to do it for you. But when you make the case about how your previous experience can add value to your new situation, then all of a sudden people are likely to say, oh, interesting. And, you know, they're not going to necessarily connect the dots on their own. If you were in sales and then you want to shift into human resources or something like that, a lot of times the natural tendency of lazy people, of which, you know, most people are a little bit lazy, is just to say, oh, well, okay, so she has exactly zero experience in HR. But you need to be able to make the case to say, no. You have plenty of people in this organization and in this department that have lots of HR experience. You don't have a lot of people who have sales experience. And here specifically is how knowing how to do these things and having gotten really good at them will enable me to bring those skills over and do something different that you're not getting anywhere else in the organization. And that is why I'm valuable.
Going back a generation, you got a job description, and it was almost the difference between a Word document and a PDF. You didn't change it. You didn't write over it. But today, more and more, people are taking at face value a job description, and to become more valuable, almost rewriting it based on the talents they bring to the table.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's It's being willing to seize control of the narrative. And when, you know, some people just get a little blocked or a little stymied when they hear from the powers that be, oh, well, that's nice, but, you know, how does that help us? And then they begin to doubt themselves and say, oh, geez, well, I guess it's not really relevant, or what do I know about that? And you have to summon up within yourself the courage to be willing to say, no, no, let me tell you why it's relevant.
Which helps in selling yourself in an interview, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
You write in Standout that true thought leaders are driven by asking questions that others haven't, and that they question assumptions that others take for granted. Can anyone become a thought leader, and what does it take?
Structurally, anyone can become a thought leader. I don't think that there are some, you know, predetermined class of people that can be thought leaders, and then the rest of the world is just not accessible to them. However, in practical terms, most people are not going to be thought leaders. And the reason for that, frankly, is that most people are not willing to put in the effort. And that actually becomes a real competitive advantage if that is something that you are interested in, because you're not competing against 7 billion people in the world. You are competing against the small fraction of those people who are actually willing to learn what it takes and to execute on that.
I love the fact that you spend so much time in your book on thought leadership. There's another term that you use in Standout. It's niche. What do you mean when you suggest that people today find and develop their niche?
There's a number of strategies that I lay out in Standout about how people can really come to be recognized experts in their field. And one of them, this is not necessarily something that everybody needs to do, but it is a good tool in the toolkit, is following a niche strategy. And basically what this looks like is just finding a facet of your field or discipline that you're studying and really going deep and getting known for that. And part of the reason this is so valuable is that obviously the bigger the sphere you're playing in, the more competition there is. If you were to start out and you have, on day one, you have no experience in an area and you say, well, I'm going to turn myself into the expert on sports. And it's like, oh, okay, well, so exactly how will you compete with ESPN? But if you pick something smaller, you know, if you pick a particular team or a particular sport that's maybe a little bit more obscure or something like that, then you have a lot more latitude. And if you are writing and speaking regularly about that topic, odds are you will become recognized as the expert because, ESPN is not going to be covering one particular cricket team all the time. But if you are, then over time, people are going to say, whoa, all right, well, if she's written, 90 blog posts about it in the past 6 months, clearly she must know something about these guys. Let's talk to her.
The word data, how people's hunger for data can actually be a gateway for people becoming an expert.
So the basic idea is that it's, talk is cheap, right? And so just about anybody can offer an opinion. Oh, I think Donald Trump is stupid. Well, I think Hillary Clinton's stupid. And you go back and forth and nobody really contributes anything meaningful. The trick is, if you are actually able to contribute facts, not opinion, if you are able to contribute new information than you analyze and provide perspective on, you are making yourself enormously valuable because, again, most people are not going to be willing to take the time to do this. So if you decide that you want to do interviews like a journalist, whether it's print interviews or blog interviews or podcasts like this, that is new information. That's valuable. If you want to write up case studies or do a survey or do a poll or just try to get at some of the interesting things. I mean, you know, clearly in the pure sense of data, you could do a statistical analysis if you have those tools, but it doesn't even have to be that. In Standout, I profile a guy named Michael Waxenberg that became known as a real estate expert on the Upper West Side of New York because he posted so many very, very thoughtful reviews of properties that were on the market, and people looked at them and said, wow, this guy has really thorough knowledge. He really knows what he's talking about. And so they chose to go with him.
On the other side of the word data is the softer word ideas. How does coming up with ideas play to someone's unique talents and their unique experience and actually give them a competitive advantage?
For every professional, being known for your ideas is a pretty good place to aspire to. It's about being known as a creative thinker, as somebody who has a bit of vision. Those are things that we really reward in our leaders. And so for folks to be able to focus in on that and to get known for their ideas is something that's quite powerful for your personal brand.
You write that creating something of real value is actually the starting point of thought leadership, but you underscore that you can't stop there. You have to build a strategy for spreading the word. And I know that the internet today has made that much more possible than just a few years ago. But what's your advice on spreading the word to the world, if you will?
Yeah. So what I discovered in the course of researching Standout is that fundamentally, it's a three-step process to share your ideas with the world. The first step is what I call building your network, which is the close-knit group of advisors, trusted advisors that are in your inner circle and can give you really good insights and feedback. The second is building your audience, which is where you start communicating more broadly with the world, and that's through blogging or speaking or doing a podcast or things like that, where you're sharing your ideas with people that don't already know you. And then finally, it is about building your community. And what that looks like is once you begin to get enough traction, once you begin to get noticed and have built an audience, there's going to come a point where the audience starts to get excited and they want to share your message with other people. They become your ambassadors. And so you are able, if you are clever, to take steps to make that easier, whether by creating an online discussion group or message board or in-person conferences or something like that, so that the momentum can really take hold.
Your two books, Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future, and Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It, these two books are must-haves in today's job marketplace. Looking back on these two books, Dory, what surprised you most about the reception to these books?
I think actually one thing that surprised me, to be honest, was something that I would call a sort of initial or first order problem, which is that a lot of folks out there are not necessarily really sure that they are worthy of standing out. They doubt themselves and they doubt the contribution that they can make. Even, you know, before you can get into the how to do it, a lot of people wonder, well, is this for me? Is this something that I could actually aspire to? And so one of the points that I really try to make in both Reinventing You and Stand Out is that I believe fundamentally everyone has a unique contribution to make. You know, no one structurally sees the world the same way as you do, because they obviously haven't had your life experiences. They haven't had your professional experiences. You have insights. And if you're willing to step up and own them, it can be a really powerful force for good to inject your voice into the debate and hopefully add to the discussion.
Your book, Story, are in Barnes & Noble. They're on Amazon. They're on barnesandnoble.com. They're inescapable, so everyone has no excuse not to get them because they're everywhere. Where do folks follow you on the internet?
Thank you, Garrison. One of the best places is to go to my website, which is doryclark.com. It's doryclark.com. And one bonus that I have for listeners is I actually created a free 42-page Standout workbook that I adapted from Standout, and it's a PDF download where folks can literally, it's a series of questions that walks you through how to develop your own breakthrough ideas and begin to really distinguish and differentiate yourself in the marketplace. So I hope that that might be of interest and value to folks, and they can get it straight from my homepage at doryclark.com.
Dory, I can't thank you enough for being on Those Diner and Motorcycle Guys, and especially for writing two incredible books. I cannot wait for the third.
Thank you so much, Garrison.